Hello, I'm Suzanne Green, an Associate Director of Neutral Management at FINRA Dispute Resolution. Welcome and thank you for listening to this Neutral Workshop. I'm pleased to introduce our speaker, Linda Feinberg, President of FINRA Dispute Resolution. Linda will review recent rule changes, introduce new rule proposals, and discuss key events in our forum. Linda, welcome.
Thank you, Suzanne. I'm delighted to share recent events in the FINRA Dispute Resolution Forum. I'll start by reviewing four new rule changes and then move on to one new rule that we are proposing. Effective July 23, 2012, FINRA amended Rules 12800 and 13800 of the Customer and Industry Codes to raise the limit for simplified arbitration cases, often referred to as paper cases, from $25,000 to $50,000. This change will benefit the parties in numerous ways. For example, forum fees will be significantly reduced since no hearing will be held unless the customer or claimant requests one. Customers who are unable to retain an attorney or who are uncomfortable appearing at a hearing have the option to have their claims decided on their written submissions. Parties will save the time and expense of preparing for, scheduling, and traveling to the hearing. And finally, raising the limit for simplified cases reduces this time to process the cases because the arbitrator and parties do not need to coordinate their calendars to schedule a hearing. We expect that the new $50,000 threshold will increase the percentage of simplified cases to approximately 16% from its current 10% of our cases. The next rule change relates to whistleblower disputes. Effective May 21, 2012, FINRA's Rule 13201 provides that a dispute arising under a whistleblower statute that prohibits the use of pre-dispute arbitration agreements is not required to be arbitrated under the industry code. These disputes may be arbitrated only if the parties agree to arbitrate after the dispute arises. A little background here. FINRA Rule 13201 provides that parties are not required to arbitrate a claim alleging employment discrimination in violation of a statute. Under the rule, parties may arbitrate claims only if they agree to do so either before or after a dispute arises. If they agree to arbitrate the claim, FINRA administers the claim under special procedures outlined in Rule 13802. Many firms include an agreement to arbitrate statutory employment discrimination claims in their employment agreements with associated persons. In the past, the question arose as to whether a whistleblower claim under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, or SOX, was a statutory employment discrimination claim under Rule 13201. Dispute resolution staff took the position that SOX whistleblower claims were not statutory employment discrimination claims and therefore were not subject to required arbitration under the industry code. In 2010, the Dodd-Frank Act amended SOX to invalidate any pre-dispute arbitration agreements relating to whistleblower claims. In light of this change set forth in Dodd-Frank, FINRA amended Rule 13201 to make clear that parties are not required to arbitrate SOX whistleblower claims. Although the impetus for the rule change was to update FINRA's stated position on SOX whistleblower claims, we made the rule text broad enough to cover any statutes that prohibit pre-dispute arbitration agreements for whistleblower claims. Since only post-dispute whistleblower claims can be filed in our arbitration forum, it is likely that issues regarding whether to arbitrate a whistleblower dispute will be resolved before arbitrators are appointed. However, it is possible that an associated person may make a whistleblower claim as a defense or counterclaim to an action brought by a firm, in which case arbitrators may have to determine whether the firm agrees to arbitrate the whistleblower claim before the panel proceeds to hear that claim. Now let's discuss collective action claims. Effective July 9, 2012, Rule 13204 of the Industry Code was revised with regard to collective action claims. Perhaps an explanation is in order here. A party is a member of a class action unless the party actively opts out of the dispute. Participation in a collective action works in reverse. A party is a member of a collective action only if the party actively opts in to the dispute. FINRA dispute resolution has consistently interpreted its class action rules to include collective actions, thereby making collective actions ineligible for arbitration in the forum. However, a 2010 case out of the Southern District of New York held that a Fair Labor Standards Act, or FLSA, collective action is not a class action for the purpose of Rule 13204 of the Industry Code. In other words, the court concluded that FINRA's interpretation of its class action rules did not expressly exclude collective actions. In response, FINRA amended the Industry Code to preclude arbitration in the FINRA forum of collective action claims under the FLSA. However, because a collective action claim also may be filed pursuant to the Age Discrimination in Employment Act or the Equal Pay Act, FINRA's revised rule precludes claims brought under these acts from being arbitrated in our forum as well. Generally, arbitrability issues regarding collective actions will be determined by FINRA prior to the panel's appointment. However, the rules provide that we will refer to a panel any dispute as to whether a claim is part of a collective action unless a party asks the court or other forum hearing the collective action to resolve the dispute within 10 days of receiving notice that FINRA has decided to refer the dispute to a panel. The rule gives arbitrators the authority to decide disputes about whether a claim is part of a collective action unless a court or other forum resolves the dispute. In such instances, the panel should ask the party bringing the claim to provide an affidavit stating that the party will not participate in the collective action or in any recovery that may result from the collective action or has withdrawn from the collective action according to any condition set by the court. For example, if an associated person files a claim in FINRA's forum that is also the subject of a pending collective action with a court, and there is a dispute about whether a party is a member of the collective action, the associated person should file an affidavit stating that he or she has not opted into the collective action and will not participate in any recovery that may result from that collective action. It is important to note that the amendment does not affect the customer code because these collective actions only apply when there is an employment relationship. The fourth and final rule change relates to FINRA's mediation code. While parties who agree to a FINRA mediation generally select a FINRA mediator, they have, until recently, been able to select a non-FINRA mediator and still mediate their cases under FINRA's auspices. However, in choosing a non-FINRA mediator, the parties are denying themselves the benefit of a mediator who has been through FINRA's extensive screening process and its comprehensive background check. Also, only FINRA mediators are subject to FINRA's evaluation procedures. Therefore, to ensure the quality and integrity of cases administered by our forum, effective August 6, 2012, we amended Mediation Rule 14107 to give the Director of Mediation the discretion to deny the services of a non-FINRA mediator in cases administered in the FINRA forum. That is not to say that the parties may never jointly request the services of a non-FINRA mediator. Under the revised rule, the Director of Mediation has the discretion to permit an outside mediator if the mediator meets the standards to qualify for our program and agrees to apply to the roster. In the event the Director of Mediation rejects the party's selection of a non-FINRA mediator, the parties may select a FINRA-approved mediator, select a non-FINRA mediator, or choose not to mediate under FINRA's auspices. However, there are many benefits to using FINRA's mediation services. For example, FINRA staff of mediation administrators can assist parties in the selection of a mediator, find a location for the mediation, work with the arbitration staff to postpone an arbitration hearing if necessary, and assist investors in enforcing a settlement agreement with brokers and their firms. Let's now move on to a proposed rule change that we are considering. This involves expungement requests by unnamed persons. Let's briefly discuss, on a very high level, the current expungement rule. FINRA Rule 2080 contains standards that must be met before FINRA will remove customer dispute information from the Central Registry Depository, or CRD, system. Rule 2080 provides that an arbitration award directing expungement must contain one of three articulated findings. Additionally, Code of Arbitration Procedure Rules 12805 and 13805 require arbitrators to complete several steps before ordering expungement of customer dispute information. Arbitrators must hold a recorded hearing, review settlement documents, if any, indicate in the award which of the Rule 2080 grounds for expungement serve as the basis for an expungement order, and provide a brief written explanation for the panel's findings. These are the rules as they currently stand. These requirements will not change as we go forward. So what has changed and what will change in the future? In 2009, the SEC approved rule changes that require firms to report when a registered representative is the subject of an investment-related, consumer-initiated arbitration claim or litigation that alleges that the representative was involved in sales practice violations, even if the representative was not a named party to the arbitration proceeding or litigation. This new rule has resulted in making information about such allegations available to the public through FINRA's broker check system. This has concerned many registered representatives who were the subject of, but were not a party to, the arbitration proceedings and now have what they consider negative information on their CRD record, which they would like to seek expungement. The current means for unnamed brokers to seek expungement relief do not provide them with adequate relief or redress. Accordingly, FINRA will propose a rule that, if approved, would permit unnamed brokers to seek expungement relief by initiating in re proceedings. In an in re proceeding, as the rule is currently being proposed, the unnamed broker would not be permitted to name any respondents. Relief requests would be limited to expungement, and the arbitrators would have no authority to award monetary damages or other relief for or against the parties seeking expungement, and the hearing on expungement would start only at the conclusion of an underlying investor case. FINRA issued a regulatory notice this spring and is now reviewing the comments it received. Subject to approval from FINRA's Board of Governors, we will file a proposed rule with the SEC, which in turn will publish the proposed rule for comment. We will look forward to your comments as we go forward with this important initiative. Now I'd like to focus on some procedures that we have recently undertaken to enhance the arbitration process for all parties and for investors, as well as for our arbitrator roster. Namely, FINRA has taken steps to further reduce extended list appointments. FINRA works very hard to ensure that parties have opportunities to review potential arbitrators' credentials and to strike and rank the arbitrators who will decide their cases. Sometimes, however, we must appoint arbitrators to a panel whose names are generated randomly by our computer system. We do this only when there are no available arbitrators left on the party's ranking sheets. We call this extending the list. Over the past 5 years, we have taken many steps to reduce the number of extended list arbitrators. In 2007, we amended the rules to limit the number of list strikes per party. And in 2010, we amended the rules to increase the number of arbitrators on each list. These changes enabled FINRA to appoint arbitrators from the party's ranking sheets in 98% of all cases in our forum. However, they did not deal with appointments at or near the hearing phase of a case. So in February of this year, we began a pilot to allow parties to select replacement arbitrators using a short list option. Here's how it works. If there's a scheduled hearing and an arbitrator is no longer able to serve, FINRA staff first attempts to replace the arbitrator by reviewing the original lists and the party's previously ranked and returned lists. Any remaining arbitrator of the same classification as the original arbitrator is invited by staff to serve. If no ranked arbitrators remain on the party's initial lists, or no remaining arbitrators are able to serve, the parties may stipulate to the use of the short list method to select a replacement arbitrator. If all parties agree to use the short list, FINRA uses its list selection system to generate a list of 3 prospective arbitrators of the same classification as the arbitrator to be replaced. FINRA staff screens the 3 prospective arbitrators to ensure that they are free of conflicts of interest and that they are able on the previously scheduled hearing dates to appear to serve in the case. FINRA sends the short list to the parties along with copies of each prospective arbitrator's disclosure report. Each side may strike one name from the list. They may rank the remaining two arbitrators in order of preference and return the list within a prescribed number of days. FINRA combines each side's list to find the highest-ranked replacement arbitrator. When a hearing is scheduled within five calendar days of a vacancy on the panel, the parties must also stipulate to a postponement in order to use the shortlist option. As always, if this results in a postponement within 3 business days before a scheduled hearing session, the 2 remaining previously appointed arbitrators will each receive $100 to compensate for the short notice postponement. So what does this mean to you as an arbitrator? You may receive a phone call from FINRA staff asking about your availability to serve as a replacement arbitrator on short notice. This does not mean that you have been appointed to the case. The purpose of the initial call is to assess your availability for the scheduled hearing dates. If you are available, your name will be included among the 3 prospective arbitrators on the short list. Once FINRA consolidates the parties' lists, only one of the prospective arbitrators will receive a second call with an invitation to accept the case. As of August 17 of this year, parties in 60% of qualifying cases have used the shortlist option to select a replacement arbitrator. After a pilot period, we will consider whether a formal rule should be enacted to codify and possibly extend these shortlist procedures. Next, an update on our customer option rule. As most of you who have listened to previous neutral workshops or read The Neutral Corner already know, effective February 1, 2011, a new rule went into effect that allows all investors filing arbitration claims the option of having an all-public panel. This rule greatly increases investor choice in the FINRA arbitration program by giving investors the option of choosing either an arbitration panel that has 2 public arbitrators and 1 non-public arbitrator, or an arbitration panel of 3 public arbitrators. Investors and their counsel have overwhelmingly elected to use the customer option rule. To date, under this rule, customers in 76% of the eligible cases chose the public panel option. And having chosen that option, they have struck all non-public arbitrators from their lists in 66% of those cases. Customers ranked 1 or more non-public arbitrators in 30% of those cases, and 4 or more in 13% of those cases processed under the all-public panel option. These statistics may have you asking whether there is still a need for non-public arbitrators on our roster. The answer is emphatically yes. Over the past several years, there has been an influx of industry cases which require non-public arbitrators. Whereas in 2008 and 9, industry cases constituted 25% of our overall caseload, so far in 2012, they constitute approximately 43% of the cases filed. So yes, FINRA still needs and welcomes non-public arbitrators to serve in our forum. Now, more good news. I'm pleased to report that FINRA launched a voluntary pilot program for large cases on July 2nd of this year. The program targets cases involving damages of at least $10 million, provided all named parties agree and are represented by counsel. And although we are targeting only cases where the relief sought is in excess of $10 million, we will allow any case into the program where all parties agree and are represented by counsel. The program has the benefit of enabling parties to customize the administrative process to better suit the special needs of larger cases. Essentially, this pilot gives parties more control over their own cases. Eligible parties will be required to pay for additional costs associated with the program. For example, parties will pay an additional administrative fee of $1,000 for each separately represented party. They may also pay additional compensation to arbitrators above FINRA's stated honorarium. FINRA will assign these cases to a specially trained and experienced case administrator, who together with a senior regional staff member will hold an early administrative conference with the parties to assist them in developing a detailed plan for administration of their case. For example, parties may customize the process by stipulating to a different arbitrator appointment method, by agreeing to specific or unique arbitrator qualifications, to selecting a non-FINRA arbitrator for their case, to developing their own procedures for document discovery, to have expanded discovery options, such as depositions and interrogatories, and to choose from a wider selection of hearing facilities. FINRA is actively reaching out to parties in appropriate cases to notify them of the availability of these specialized procedures. You might be interested to know that there are currently 186 open cases in which more than $10 million is sought, including 51 cases seeking $50 million or more in damages. We will continue to share information about this new pilot as we monitor its progress. And finally, before I conclude this workshop, I want to take this opportunity to give you three important reminders about your service as FINRA neutrals. These reminders refer to your duty to disclose, your duty to ensure the proper recording of all hearings, and your duty to safeguard all hearing documents. These messages will not be new to you. First, disclosure. You must make full and complete disclosures. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of timely, complete, and accurate arbitrator disclosures. As you may be aware, an arbitrator's failure to disclose is often cited by parties seeking to vacate an award. We have highlighted this crucial arbitrator duty in a number of ways. We devoted an entire neutral workshop to the importance of arbitrator disclosure in the fall of 2011. We also devoted an entire issue of the Neutral Corner to the importance of arbitrator disclosure. And we now provide additional disclosure support and guidance on the arbitrator disclosure page located within the arbitrator portion of DR's website. Please do the necessary research to make full and complete disclosure and share your disclosures with FINRA staff as soon as a disclosure comes to your attention. And when in doubt about the necessity of a disclosure, err in favor of disclosing. The next reminder concerns the recording of hearings. It is imperative that the digital recorder be used correctly and that hearings are recorded in their entirety. Prior to the start of the hearing, a panel member should test the digital recorder to ensure that it is working properly. At the start of the recording, identify the case name, case number, and the hearing date. Stop the recorder during all executive and deliberation sessions and breaks. You do not want to be in a situation where your off-the-record comments are captured as part of the official record of the case. and remember to turn the recorder back on after lunch, breaks, and executive sessions. Always feel free to contact the case administrator if there is a problem or if you have a question about recording the hearing. You can also review the advanced training module titled Operating the Digital Recorder for Audits Progress and to give you a preview. Finally, the Department of Neutral Management has a new centralized phone number to ensure that phone calls are answered properly and by staff who have the expertise to address each caller's concerns. So please take down these numbers. The national toll-free number is 855-209-1620. Again, that's 855-209-1620. For arbitrators who live or work in New York City, the number is 212-858-3999. Again, for New Yorkers, that number is 212-858-3999. Both numbers will prompt you to press a number on the keypad based on your specific inquiry, after which you will be directed to a staff member best suited to answer your questions. This concludes today's Neutral Workshop. Thank you for taking the time to listen, and as always, thank you for your service as a neutral for FINRA dispute resolution.